Welcome back to the Backstreet Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Squires. This is episode 17. I'm here with my co-host, Michael McKnight, who's sporting a nice tan from the Belfast to Irish Milers meet in association with TripAdvisor yesterday. How you going, Michael? All good?
I'm good, Danny. I'm kind of just recovering from amazing weather. So as an Australian, you see, we can provide you with something close to your natural habitat for maybe one day a year.
Yeah. Weekends like this make it all worth it. The days and months of suffering through the cold and the wet, you know, weekends like this, unreal.
Well, look, we've got some grit chat coming up in the first half. I think we're going to be all over the Belfast Irish Milers meet, which was yesterday, and featured, I think it's fair to say, some incredible performances. And then in part two, we're going to be picking over last weekend's Belfast Marathon. And I think you also have a special guest who's going to be joining us.
That is very true. I've just actually finished a call with Gladys Ganyal, who was the first Northern Irish woman home at this year's marathon in Belfast. Obviously, a lot of people from Northern Ireland and Ireland, as well as I'm sure other places, know of Gladys and her prowess. So yeah, that was a great chat. So stay tuned for the second half of the episode where we'll play that. But yeah, as mentioned, the Belfast Irish Milers meet was yesterday at Mary Peters Track. It was an absolutely stunning day. Well done to Eamon on the fantastic event. Are there any sort of results? I can sort of kick us off with a few of the international race results if you want.
Yeah, I think, Danny, if you just take us through there and then, as I tend to do, I will give you my tuppence worth.
Yep, that's what we're here for. Look, I think it's a very good race to start with, the women's 800.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think this is one of the last races of the day, and it's probably received the most sort of media attention. Young Phoebe Gill, she's only just turned 17. She runs for St. Albans AC. She clocked 157.86 for the 800, which is a European under 18 record. It's the second fastest time this year out of any sort of level. So it's a second fastest world lead time. That's an Olympic qualifier. She's unsponsored. She's 17 years old. Do I need to say that again? She's 17 years old. And she pretty much front ran the race and didn't even look tired. Yeah, just stunning.
Yeah, I think it was a three and a half second PB, something of that order. I mean, I was checking her out then after the race, and she is a really high caliber young athlete, English girls champion. I think she also holds maybe UK age records for 800 and 1500, but I don't think she anticipated what she did yesterday. And as the race unfolded, there were some really good athletes in the chasing pack. They just looked shell-shocked and nobody was able to respond. You know, remarkable thing to see.
Yeah, definitely. And it just kind of boggles the mind what she could be capable of in a even more high caliber race and with a few more years under her belt. Like, that was just stunning. She, you know, as soon as the pacer stepped off, she just sort of kept with it. And, you know, from what I saw, she was maybe 5 to 10 meters ahead for the whole last sort of half a lap. It's amazing.
Yeah. And I guess this year, I think it's the world under 20s, and you would almost suggest that for her, that's probably, you know, the best option. Because inevitably, you know, height might come along now and pressure for Olympics and everything else. And I often think with really talented young athletes, she's still at school, just let her develop because, you know, obviously a great talent, but in 2 or 3 years, if things go well, she could be absolutely sensational and maybe pushing Keely Hutchinson, who's the, you know, Britain's leading female middle distance runner at the minute, arguably, and certainly world class. But yeah, amazing.
Yeah, you'd be happy to know I've reached out to offer Phoebe full sponsorship of the Backstreet podcast. So just waiting on her reply.
Yeah, we'll be able to give her a pair of socks. But not to be outdone, Danny, the guys then delivered up a superb race also.
Yeah, they did. So yeah, as I mentioned, in that women's race, Phoebe Gill was first, followed by Erin Wallace and Anne-Marie Nissen. And in the men's 800, Callum Dodds from Enfield and Haringey, he ran 144.79, followed by Thomas Randolph from Tamworth AC / he runs for Hoka. And then Ole Jakob from Norway, he ran 145.55. So another blisteringly fast race. And I think this was the second sort of, you know, race that had the most sort of media attention from the meet, with Callum running that amazing time.
Yeah, I don't think, again, a big PB for him. I think he was at Penn State a couple of years ago, or maybe even just last year. But this is way better than anything he's done to date. So again, another athlete announces himself kind of on a, certainly on an international stage, a British stage at Eamon's meet. So I'm sure Eamon is absolutely rubbing his hands with this
Yeah,
kind of success.
he'd be chuffed
It's
with that.
really,
Yeah, I think, yeah, you go, Michael.
it's a fast track. You know,
Yeah.
we say it every year. Some of the dubs were saying, oh, everybody knows that Mary Peter's track is short, but you know, that's clearly not the case. I think it's just a fast track. You get a good buzz. The natural kind of bowl, I think, you know, creates good conditions for racing.
Yeah, we'll just have to remind the training group of that if they're ever struggling down there on the track night. It's a fast track, guys. You've got to go quicker than this. Come on. Yeah, Callum Dodds. So that 144.79, I think that was 0.09 of a whatever second or something from the Olympics qualifier, which I think is 144.7. So yeah, hopefully he can get another good one. And maybe, who knows, get himself within reach of the team. Be good to see. So, moving on from there. So, men's 1500, a bit more of a tactical race. I think a few people sort of said maybe a bit of a sloppy race on all accounts. A bit of tripping and, like, you know, fast and slow. And to be fair, it didn't even really look like it got super fast. I know a lot of people were thinking that that race was going to happen in 3:37 or something like that, even quicker maybe. But they ended up running 3:42. So Darragh McIlhenny from Bantry AC, he ran 3:42.48, followed by Job Jitsma from Netherlands. He ran 3:42.69, and then our guy Nick Griggs from Canada Track Club, he ran 3:42.74. So what are your sort of takeaways there from the race, Michael?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I mean, it's early season. You know, certainly Nick has come on, you know, back down from altitude, has to travel. I'm sure he wouldn't use that as an excuse. But I think for a lot of the guys in the race all looked a little bit gun shy, I suppose. And a few races will certainly help that. And it was a messy race. I mean, nobody was getting a clear run. There was a lot of people. I mean, McIlhenny was boxed in at one point and then clearly got a run down the home straight. Nick was boxed in. But these things happen, you know, particularly when you get a pretty good quality field and a lot of guys who are similar level. And you know, again, it was a good race. You know, it's interesting, because obviously for Dara, Nick's the young pretender. And you know, there'd be big pressure he'll probably put on himself to try and stay ahead. But you know, Nick's getting closer and closer. And I would probably back him eventually to beat Darragh over 800 if it's a, or over 1500 if it's a, you know, a
Yeah, I
truer
actually
run
got
race.
I got chatting to Dara just after the race. So yeah, I will play that clip in just a moment. Yeah, he sort of, I guess, echoed what you were saying there. I think Nick has actually run quicker over 1500, if I'm not
Oh,
wrong. Do you know he's
he has, yeah.
I got Dara's 1500 meter PB completely wrong. I didn't even know it, so I just said to him in the interview, like, oh, that wasn't a PB, was it? He was like, no, I've run 3:37. I was like, oh yeah, of course. Yeah, I knew that. So no, yeah,
Okay, look,
I'll
we'll listen to that and then we'll talk about the 3K.
Yep, sounds good. All right, so I'm here with Darragh McIlhenny from Bantry AC. Just won the international men's 1500 meter race. Time of 3:42. That's not a PB, is it? Or it is?
No, it's not. I've run 3:37 a
Yep,
couple of years
okay.
ago.
Yep, amazing. How'd you find the race?
Yeah, it was good. Like, it was definitely not kind of what I expected. I think we were all kind of coming here thinking it was going to be a lot quicker than it was. But I suppose it was just one of those, like, after 200, we're all kind of looking around, like, who's going to go with the pacemaker, and nobody did, like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
Yeah.
and to be honest with you, just, like, from my point of view, it was, like, my first race of the season, and obviously being, like, a kind of 5K runner predominantly, I just kind of didn't really want to go up in front, to be honest, because I was like, if it's slow, it's slow. I was just trying to focus on racing it, so I was happy enough to just sit in, and obviously it didn't really get much quicker, like, until probably the last lap or last 700. And then obviously it's just about trying to win, or do you know what I mean, and just try and have a tactical race and see how we can get on. But no, I was happy with it.
Yeah, are you happy with that as, like, a season opener?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, to be honest, it probably doesn't tell me a whole lot about my shape, because, like, obviously I felt comfortable until the last 200, but like everybody did, do you know what I mean? Because obviously, what were we running, like, slower than 60 seconds a lap, yeah, which is obviously a lot slower than what most of the people in the race can do. But it was definitely still like enjoyable and a bit of a different experience to like come to a race like this and have it all tactical.
So. Yeah, and what has the training been leading up to this as well?
Yeah, pretty decent. Like I came down from St Moritz there on Thursday, and I was there for 5 weeks. So yeah, pretty heavy volume the last 5 weeks, and definitely kind of came into this with heavy legs, like mostly. So that's another reason I was kind of not that disappointed when it was slow, because I kind of felt like I'm probably quite strong aerobically. I was doing obviously mostly aerobic work. So I was kind of thinking on the start, I was like, geez, if this goes like 57 first lap, it's going to sting. But
yeah,
I was trying to get myself ready for that. But then obviously, when you go through 232, you're kind of like, all right, it's not.
Was that what it was being paced at, 57? Or?
I think it was supposed to be 57 point. And to be fair to Rob Hewis in the pace record, like, he didn't do anything wrong. I think he was going to be spot on, but obviously he turned around after 200, there was nobody on the back of him. So, like, I mean, his job was basically done at that stage, you know what I mean?
Yeah, brilliant.
And those races just happen every now and then where, like, you're kind of, everyone's expecting somebody else to go with it.
Yeah,
obviously today nobody did.
And is that kind of playing to your mind? Like, you know, obviously, if everyone's going with the pace, then you sort of jump on that and everyone runs a good time. Mm. At what point in the race do you sort of think, okay, maybe this is going to play out more like a championship?
Oh, to be honest, today I knew after like 200 metres. Yeah. Because, I mean, like, the first 100 was obviously quick, whatever everyone's getting after. And then all of a sudden, you know yourself when you're racing, like the cadence completely drops.
Yeah.
You can see the pacer like way up ahead, kind of looking around. So straight away I knew, I was like, right, it's not quick, but.
Yeah.
What harm, like,
do you back yourself on the kick finish?
Yeah, like I have, obviously it's a bit different because I'm a 5k guy, so it's kind of a bit strange, but I actually like kick finishes, that's kind of strong at them. So obviously when it got to like 80 to go today, I actually felt pretty confident that I was going to be able to. I was just worried about Griggs on my shoulder,
yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah.
I was like, I knew he was like right next to me, because I kind of come across him at like 120 to go, and I thought it'd be one of the two of us.
So was he one of your biggest rivals going into this race? Obviously you guys have had, you know, a few fights here and there.
Yeah, when me and Griggs have raced loads, like obviously he's only like 19, but it kind of feels like he's been around for years because he's so good. But I got on really well with Greece. We were in Samaras together, I was training with him every day up there. So, it's kind of funny when you're going into a race and obviously you're probably the main rival for the win, and like we're warming up together and we're chatting together beforehand. But I knew, like, obviously he was like the fastest person in the field and like the person to beat or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was what, as I say, with like kind of 120 to go, you're kind of looking around, and I wanted to go, but I also didn't want to go and have Greece, yes, like on my shoulder and just like pit me or whatever. So it was it was a real cat and mouse. Like,
yeah. And weather-wise, couldn't ask for a better day.
Yeah, it was unreal, to be fair. Like, obviously, there's a bit of a wind on the home straight, which is probably one of the reasons that nobody got on the back of the pacer, I would say, because I think, like, you know, had the pacer, say, gone to, like, 900 or something, I think that would have been pretty tough coming into the bell, had it been a quick pace. So that might have played into it a little bit for, obviously, nobody going to the front. But yeah, I mean, like, obviously it's like 20 degrees in Ireland, you don't get that every day. Like.
No, definitely. A few sunburns today, I imagine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, congratulations. What's next?
So I'm racing 5K next weekend in Germany. That's going to be like my main target race.
Yeah.
Obviously, I guess like from a physiological point of view, like today was kind of hopefully going to be like my rust buster. Didn't really work out that way, I think, because it was so slow. But definitely like from a tactical point of view and from a confidence point of view, it was nice to be able to, you know, to win in the field like that. But yeah, the 5K in Reilingen in Germany next week is the big one. Hopefully run the European standard and see how close the race ends up going towards like kind of 13:10. Because obviously 5K being my predominant distance, I'd love to qualify for the Europeans and maybe even the Olympics and that. So
you qualify at 14:05?
Yeah, for sure. So like obviously I think like the way it's going to work out, and like I don't know how many opportunities I'm going to have like to be in a race that's going 13:05. I think this race at the weekend is going to be a little bit slower, but obviously you have the opportunity to like qualify through the point system and stuff.
Yeah.
So I mean, to be honest, I'm trying to disassociate myself a small bit from the outcome and just kind of focus on being in races and racing well. And that was why today, like when it was slow, I kind of just said to myself, like, it's ground, it doesn't matter, like I just want to race and come away from the race feeling positive, because it's very easy in a race like that to panic when you see like 63 after a lap, and you know all these ideas you had in your head of running like 336, 337 go out the window. It's very easy to panic and then you come away having like a negative experience. But to be honest, today I was like, right, let's just see if I can win, and just set myself up for next week.
Brilliant. Well, look, congrats on the win, and yeah, catch you a bit later. Cheers.
Yes, nice one, man. Thanks. Cheers. Very much.
So that was Darragh McIlhenny. And this is the 3K. So the A race, Callum Morgan, training partner for Nick Griggs, Kando athlete. He was also up in St. Moritz, I believe. He came first in 7:59.37, so a PB for him, followed by William Battershill from Bristol and West in 8 minutes, basically flat, and then Pierre Merchant from Dublin City Harriers in 8:03.92. So That was the A race. What are your thoughts, Michael?
Yeah, I was really impressed with Callum. I mean, I've known Callum for a few years because from the Similkis days, and he's one of those athletes who's getting better and better and kind of goes a little bit under the radar because Nick's so fantastic. But I thought he ran a really mature, really composed race, and just eased the way down the home straight. So it's a really good start for him, and I would expect him this season to go certainly well under 14 minutes for 5,000 meters, which I think maybe is his preferred distance. And I think he also wants to maybe try and get a few 1500s as well, get his PB down. But I think you managed to catch up with him as well on your roving reporter kind of mode.
Yeah, I did. And yeah, as you said, sort of he echoed what you said there as far as, you know, he looked very comfortable throughout the whole race. He was kind of just sitting in second or third, you know, right in a really good spot. And he definitely looked the freshest and the best out of those leading three. And then, yeah, just down that sort of last 150 down the home straight, he moved away. So yeah, I actually did catch up with Callum, and he sort of broke down the race for us and talked about his training a little bit in St. Moritz. And yeah, I'll play that clip now.
All right, so we're here with Callum Morgan after his 3,000 meter race. He was in the A race, Candor Track Club. How did it go, Callum? All good?
Yeah, kind of perfect, to be honest. Just dropped down from altitude 2 days ago and didn't know what shape it was in. I kind of done a 5K mark, just wasn't happy with it. So I was just trying to get fit the last couple of weeks, and then felt really strong in the race, but just didn't want to take that gamble and try pushing on. So I was happy to sit in and then push past last 100 and somehow managed to still get a small PB, which is always good when you feel that comfortable PB in and getting the win.
Yep, and conditions wise, how'd you feel?
Yeah, I was a bit worried before, thinking it was a bit too warm, but there was a nice wee breeze, to be fair, in the race, so it kind of was perfect, to be honest. Like, hadn't got too hot yet, so yeah, it was happy enough.
Yeah, and is that a season opener for the track season? Or?
Yeah, well, I'd done the varsities, but it was more just like a tactical, but this was the proper opener. I kind of just done that because I'm on the uni scholarship, but yeah, it's the proper opener, just proper to see where the fitness is at.
Yep, and what's plans from here?
So go to Brussels in 2 weeks to do the race over in Belgium. It was previously the Ortegum race for a PB last year, so I'm in the 5K there and hopefully can get a big PB, and then probably do a few BMCs and just take the season it goes, just do a few 1500s, try to get all the times done. I don't really have a championship to focus on this year, so it's just about lowering the times as much as possible.
Yeah, and how do you feel coming off, you were in St. Moritz, is that right? How do you feel? Are you feeling better than ever? Or?
Yeah, that race today just gave me a huge confidence. Like, I came down and I just felt really, really good, really comfortable, even with a lap to go, so huge confidence from that, and training was kind of perfect over there, hit big miles, and when your only focus is running, it becomes quite easy, to be fair, so yeah.
Yeah, no, you looked really comfortable, even like, you know, coming into that last lap, all the guys around you looked like they were struggling, and you seemed like you had an extra gear, so...
Yeah, it felt really smooth. Yeah,
you've been putting it to Nick Griggs over there as well in St. Moritz, or?
Yeah, training the way. He kind of left for a few days to go race over in Spain, but yeah, we had a good 2.5 weeks together training well, and when you're training one of the best athletes in Europe, you can only get better yourself as well.
Yeah. Word on the street is he went away just to recover a bit because you were training him too hard.
Yeah, the altitude was getting too much for him, but yeah, it's always good to train with people like that, and the other Athletics Ireland boys like Darren McElhenney and stuff. It was good just to be around them lads and training with them for 3 weeks.
Yeah, and what other races are you looking forward to today?
The 15 is going to be unreal. It'll be a good race between Dara and Nick. Obviously, it's more Nick's distance, but Dara seems to always get one over on him, but it'd be good to see how that goes, and it's meant to be paced very fast, and I know Nick's in incredible shape and Dara's in good shape, so that'll be some race.
Okay, excellent. Oh, well, cheers. Thanks for joining us, and yeah, catch you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
That was Callum Morgan breaking down the men's 3,000 meter race at the Belfast Irish Milers meet. The B race was also very exciting, I guess, for us, because we had our my training partner and friend Cameron Stewart was in the race, Annadale Strider. He came first in 8:29.60, followed by Charlie Jones from Lagan Valley AC, who didn't let him run away with it too far. He was definitely hot on his heels for most of the race. He ran 8:30.13. And then Stephen Cashin from Clonliffe Harriers ran 8:31.24. So yeah, really interesting race there as well. And it looked really hot and uncomfortable out there. And I was glad that I was on the sidelines and not racing a 3,000 meter right then and there.
Yeah, it was a good race. I mean, one of the difficulties for Eamon when you're trying to set the fields is there were probably three or four, maybe five, six guys in the A race, who actually probably would have prospered in the B race and made it even more competitive. But it's really difficult, you know, where do you ever draw that line? So I think Cameron was a bit disappointed not to be in the A race, but had the opportunity in the B race to develop a whole other skill set. You know, it's one thing being dragged around in a high quality field, just hanging on. It's a different thing to try to build a strategy and win a race, particularly from the front, where you're there to be shot at. So he will have learned a lot yesterday. Just before we move on from 3Ks, I want to give a shout out to Newry's Jack O'Farrell. I followed Jack, good runner, when he was at St Colman's as a schoolboy. Went to Loughborough. He's now, I think, based in Liverpool. He's another developing talent. He ran 8:07, which is a, you know, a big PB. So well done to Jack.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, that was in the A race. Yeah, fantastic result from him. The women's 3K was quite exciting as well. Almi Nuorka, does she have a famous parent by any
Yeah,
chance?
her dad, Richard Nuorka, was a British international cross-country runner, a track runner, and also, I think, pretty accomplished marathon runner. So she obviously has some pedigree. But she ran really well. I mean, it was one of those interesting races in that there was a race for the English and down south athletes. And then, you know, 200 meters back, there was a very compelling race amongst all of the local girls, which was won by Hannah Gilliland. And that's sometimes, you know, the thing to keep an eye on these races, that you will have races within races.
Yeah, that's
So
why
I know.
I actually clipped the first five. So yeah, it was Almi Nuorka from Brighton and Phoenix. She ran 9:17, and then Cheryl Nolan from St. Albans AC 9:18. Danielle Donegan from Tullamore Harriers. She ran 9:31, and then yeah, as you said, Hannah Gilliland from Annadale Striders. She ran 9:40.51. And Adele Monaghan from Dublin City Harriers ran 9:40.97. So not sure who was just after her, but that must have been a pretty close dip on the line right there.
Yeah, I think the other big performance, certainly from an elite perspective, was the women's 400. And Sophie Becker, who's an Irish international and part of a very, very successful Irish women's 4x400 team, got a massive PB of 51:13. And she looked absolutely elated when she crossed the line. And this is important because Ireland qualified, I think, just about a week ago for Paris for the women's 4x400, and they're shaping up to have a really strong team. Charlene Maudsley's running really, really well. You've got Phil Healy, you've got Sophie, and then you have Rhodisia Adeleke, who is the world-class athlete, you know, and a serious contender in her own right for the 400 meters. So that's all good. But moving away from the more international aspect, Danny, there were a lot of really good local performances. Maybe people weren't winning, or if they were winning, they were winning B and C races. But I just want to kind of just give a little bit of attention to some of those performances. So Ballymena and Antrim's Callum Baird is our best 400 meter runner at the minute. He clocked 46.5 for third place, and he's now building a really impressive body of work, consistently running 46s. Young Finn Diver from Beachmount. Again, his mum and his uncle were both great athletes. He won the C800 and a lifetime best of 1:56.02. And then two guys, young athletes, produced super performances over 1500. Oisin Toy from Finn Valley clocked a 3:47, and Frank Buchanan, who I think is still at school, ran a 3:49. He's a guy from St Michael's College AC in Enniskillen. And I don't know what the stats are, but I would assume that, as with most years, there were a lot of local athletes who will have come away from that meet with PBs and have made a perfect start to the season. So, yeah, good job, guys.
Yeah, young and old. I think our sort of my club mate Chris Anderson, he ran 3:59 for the first time in the 1500. I know he was stoked with that. And friend of the show, Connor Curran, actually got a PB. He's obviously runs for North Belfast Harriers, and he ran 4:03. So yeah, I was chatting to him after the race, and he was absolutely stoked with that.
And I think that's got to be an age record as well.
Yeah, it seems like every time he gets a PB, then it's also an age record. So yeah, it's
Yeah.
smashing from Connor. Well done.
So, Danny, before we leave the meet, I think you managed to catch up with Eamon and have a chat.
Yep, I did. Yeah, caught Eamon just after everything was getting packed down, and yeah, he just kind of gave us a wrap up of the day. So yeah, I will play that interview, and then we can move on to chatting about Belfast Marathon. I was just going to say as well, big thank you to Eamon for having us at the athletes dinner after. Yeah, my only complaint there was no chicken tenders left at the buffet when I got up there, but other than that, it was a great event. So yeah, we'll play the interview now and we'll chat about the Belfast Marathon.
So I'm here with Eamon Christie, race director for the Belfast Irish Milers meet, associated with TripAdvisor. Thank you, Eamon. You've just finished the meet. How are you feeling? Great day.
I'm still on a high now. I mean, them last, the two 1500 meters were outstanding, but them two 800 meters were absolutely unreal. That young girl, 157, it's the second fastest in the world. Only Mary
Phoebe
Moore.
Gill.
Phoebe Gill has run, only Mary Moore, who's an Olympic champion, has run faster than her. Young girl took it from the, once the pacemaker stepped off, put it down to all the other athletes, and phenomenal. 125 at 600 metres we got her at, and she was able to maintain that the line. So absolutely over the moon. Olympic standard for her.
Yep.
Obviously, top GB athlete now.
Yep.
But she was telling me there she has an Irish passport, so I would maybe advise Athletics Ireland.
Yeah. I think she's unsponsored as well, from what I heard. So
she's unsponsored at the minute.
Yeah.
But so let's say her phone.
Her value's just gone up real.
She should be a high commodity. But I mean, if you look at the second and third place, I mean, Amory and Eason, and they both went very close to 2 minutes as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole field was stacked, and you know, absolutely delighted, and the men's 800 was great. It was great to see Callum Dodds come out and produce that. I was talking to his coach, Matthew Yates, who's a former GB great 800
yep.
meter runner, at the hotel last night, and he was telling me, you know, he was good sub 145 shape. So you know, sometimes
144 something in the end.
He ran 144. You know, so sometimes you know, he talked the talk and he also walked the walk.
Yep.
Which is phenomenal. We had the great weather, but not only that, we had a young lad in the 400 meters from Athan Rye who ran 46.17. Which is a standard for the under 20, a standard for the under 20 championships in Peru.
Okay.
Brilliant. Sophie Becker came all the way from the Bahamas here today, and she ran 51.13, which is a standard for the European championships.
Okay.
And it's also just a smidgen off the Olympic A standard. So she can go away and find Fettel knowing that, you know, she can qualify. Not only is she a great compartment to the relays, but as an individual runner, she has come with age now the last couple of days. But even Israel Orlandi came up here and he ran 10.57, great season opener. Darren McElhenney won the 1500 with a great race with Nick Griggs and Job Estan from Holland. So you can see with the many nationalities that have been here today, the meeting is fairly taken off. And you know, without the likes of TripAdvisor and Richard Garvin and Cahal McLaughlin, I know I keep going on about these people, but if it wasn't for them, it's this event wouldn't happen to this stage. But I mean, I was talking to Jenny Meadows there, and she was saying it's a phenomenal stadium, phenomenal setup. Her athlete, Eva Lloyd, won the 1500. Now, she didn't run a particularly fast time, but Jenny was telling me she'll have learned a lot from that and how to race midfield and then make her way through. You know, Ellie Baker comes over, you know, Archie Davis, and, you know, obviously the great runner himself, Richard Nurerka's daughter, Almy, was here and she won the 3K. So, look, every race is something for everybody, and, you know, I'm a wee bit overwhelmed at the minute with the standard, you know?
So, yeah, and as I just sort of saw before you jumped on the mic here, you know, really grateful athletes, and you know, you somehow got the perfect weather again and put on a fantastic meet. So
that was young Rebecca Rossiter. Unfortunately, she missed the actual entry stage because she was away somewhere. But I mean, she came to me a few weeks ago and asked if I could get her in. And lucky enough, somebody dropped out and I gave her a spot. And you can see her coming up there. She was tickled pink and she ran sub 4:30, which is an improvement for her for the last couple of years. So, you know, that makes my day when athletes like that come up and say thank you and you know, she had a great time.
Yeah.
So,
seems like you've earned yourself a beer for your night off tonight and then back to work tomorrow.
I might give myself 2 days off this year, you know. I might start working Tuesday again. But yes, we're all going to the hotel to have a couple of scoops, as we say here, and a bit of food, and hope you're going to join us there, Danny.
Absolutely, yeah.
And obviously, you know, most of the athletes will be there, so you can bring your wee microphone and you never know who you might get chatting to.
That's it. I'll just leave the mics hot on the table, so.
Absolutely.
Look, thank you so much. And yeah, I think it's really appreciated by a lot of people. And yeah, it's just a fantastic day of racing here at Mary Pierce Track. So
thank you, Danny, and I appreciate all the help that the Backstreet Podcast done for me.
All right, so that was Eamon Christie there, talking to us about the Belfast Irish Milers Meet in association with TripAdvisor. Slightly long name. I almost trip myself up every time I say that.
So, Danny, can we just pause there for a moment? Justin Reid, ex Willowfield athlete, Northern Irish international steeplechaser. Justin, if you're listening, we are giving your company a really big shout out. So give us some love.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, a couple of holidays would be great. So it's been a week since the Belfast Marathon was on. You know, weather was pretty good on the whole, I think. You know, it was maybe a little bit warm for people coming a bit further down the pack in the race. But for the most part, the weather was really good. It was a little bit humid and the crowds were fantastic. I mean, coming off the Ormo Road was absolutely stunning. There was, some, record numbers and some really impressive battles up front, as well as some, really encouraging local performances. A few results. So the race was won by Matthew Kiplimo Kemboi in 2:14:44. Second place was Aweke Yemer in 2:14:52. So pretty close, those guys, between the two of them. Third place was Moses Kilmuwo Tuyange. He ran 2:15. And then, I think sort of like from more of a local perspective, maybe it's better if I sort of yell out a few of the women's names first. So the women's race was won by Beatrice Jepkeme in 2:35. And then Lala Selsuli, she came second in 2:35:20. And then Shwe Waldemeskel, she came third in 2:39:58. First Northern Irish woman home was Gladys Ganuel in 2:40:21. And first Northern Irish local athlete home was in the men's was Iskander Turkey from Annandale Striders in his debut performance. He not only did he absolutely smash it out of the park, the time that he ran it in is very pleasing to listen to. He ran 2 hours, 22 minutes, and 22 seconds. So, just absolutely insane. Like, I personally wasn't sure he was going to run. I didn't think he was going to run that fast, if I'm completely honest. I just thought maybe, somewhere between 2:25 to 2:30. That's an amazing debut. And hopefully gives him a good taste of the marathon, but he's gone and absolutely smashed it out of the park. So yeah, Michael, you're his coach. Give us all the secrets and tips and things how he did it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess he did what I thought he was capable of doing. We had him in the lab a few months ago, before Ramadan, during the cross country season, and the indications were that, he's an endurance athlete and he was very comfortable running at, kind of 5:10, 5:15 pace. And he looks like he could do it all day. So the one problem he had was that Ramadan was from kind of March into April. And that really affected his preparation. So what I would say is that he ran this marathon with probably about the minimal preparation that you could safely do to run. So I think it's a great platform moving forward. He gets a better block of training, he's got that bit of experience, and we get him on a better course. And I certainly think that he's comfortably a sub 220 guy potentially, and Belfast just confirmed it, and he ran smart. I mean, I think he was canny, because I think if he'd been tempted to try to go out with the Africans, there would have been blood in the street, and I think that's the secret, that for marathon guys, you've got to have that patience and that control and not get carried away by the euphoria of the event and everything else. I noticed a couple of guys who went out pretty big and it didn't end well. So, it was good to watch. And he seems to have recovered. I was chatting to him today. The legs feel pretty good and he's, been back running and things and hoping to run a 10K in a couple of weeks' time, which is good.
Mm, he's an absolute beast. He didn't even look tired when I saw him after the race. And yeah, as you said, put him on a faster course with, a bit more experience and a better training block, and he'd absolutely destroy it. I mean, I was even talking to him about what he was going to do in the race, what his plans were. And he said he was hoping to just sort of, target the winner from last year, the Moroccan guy, and just sit behind him and hopefully run that. And I sort of thought to myself, like, oh geez, that might end badly. But that was just because I maybe didn't completely back him to run 2:22. So yeah, he proved me absolutely wrong. And yeah, even the fact, you know, as we're talking in the car before we got up to Stormont for the start of the race, I said, you know, taking any gels or anything, and he just basically was thinking he'd just have the one gel or two gels, and I don't think he really had much more than that on him or like during the race. So yeah, just
no, I mean,
stunning.
He's got still so much to learn about the event, and I think if he runs a few more halves and tries to, you know, improve his time there, you know, whether he does another marathon this year, I'm not sure, but it's certainly something he will come back to. I think it's also, we got to mention a couple of, you know, other guys on the podium. Gary Hegarty from Strive had another really solid run, I think a PB, 2:25.
Yeah.
And Gary is a strong man, mentally tough, and he was working for a lot of the race, the latter half, on his own, but didn't flag, didn't fall off the pace, so well done to him. And also, Chris Madden from Beachmount. Chris ran a really canny, I think 2:32, looked full of running. Spent part of the race with his training buddy, Ed McGinley, but I was chatting to Ed yesterday, and Ed sort of, I think it was the first time or second time he had raced in the Super Shoes, and he's a naturally a very kind of bouncy, springy runner, and I think he got really tight, hamstrings got really tight, and I think the last 10 miles were an absolute slogfest for him. So he was joking that he's retired again, but
yeah.
I hope he has.
Yeah, fingers crossed he hasn't retired again, but yeah, no, it's yeah, it can be tough out there, that's for sure. Another really good result, this might be one of your muckers, Tommy Hughes from Strive Racing Club. He actually set a world record for I believe he's 64 years old. I don't know if that's when the age group begins, but he set whatever age category world record he is in with a 2:36. 2:36 at 64 years old. That's amazing.
Tommy is a marathon legend in Ireland. I mean, he went to previous Olympics, and is just a sort of enigmatic kind of character. Just manages somehow to keep going, and has, I think, from his kind of late 50s, has just devastated all of the, you know, world age bests.
Okay. So this is just standard fare from him then.
Yeah. I mean, he's actually slowing down a bit, because a couple of years ago he was absolutely flying, and he would kind of like do a marathon one day and then appear and do like a 10K 2 days later and break records and stuff. So time's finally catching up with him. I don't know.
I don't think so when he's running 2:36. But yes, no, I understand what you're saying. Look, women's local results. So obviously Gladys Ganulin first, and then it was Claire McGuigan from Letterkenny, and then Elisoa Crawford was in third. So yeah, that's kind of rounding out the individual results. I don't know if there's any others that you wanted to mention there before I rattle off the relay results.
Yeah, I think another guy, coach, I mean, Leo McSweeney, big PB. I think he had previously had a 2:52. He got down to 2:46 and really had to tough it out over the last few miles. But I mean, you've done a bit of running with Leo, and you know how hard he works. And one of the joys of coaching or being involved in the sport, it's about the progress that individuals make, you know, set against what they've already achieved. And when you see somebody work really, really hard and make those big improvements at whatever level they're competing at, whether it's a guy breaking 3 hours or 2:30 or 2:20, that's not the significant bit. The significant bit is the commitment, the effort, and then the reward. So it's been really nice to see. So I'm sure Leo was like very many people in the race who had invested time and effort and who hopefully were rewarded with really good PBs. And Danny, you had a kind of ringside seat. That's probably not the best analogy, but after London, a couple of weeks later, you decided you were going to help some people pace. You were going to pace make, help some people who were trying to break 3 hours.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, it's long run season. I jumped in the 3 hour pace group with Patrick Kerr and Noel McNally from Roadrunners. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun. Like there was no pressure on me. I wasn't an official pacemaker or anything like that. It was just a matter of jumping in for as long as I wanted to, and then I could pull out at any point. So yeah, really, really good group there. Lots of people hoping to break 3 hours. And I think a lot of the people in that group did sort of go on to either push ahead or just nick under three. I do want to give a special shout out to Patrick Adams, Packy from Roadrunners. He ran 2:59, and that was his first time under 3 hours. Yeah, I don't know him that well, but I feel like I got to know him a lot better coming up the Ormo Road when he was absolutely battling like nothing else, starting to walk. And, you know, he was on pace to run sub three, and it was just real like grit and determination from him to get through those last couple of miles, and he did it. So yeah, really credit to him. And the really special thing as well is his daughter actually had flown in to surprise him at the end of the marathon, and he ended running sub three. So even more special. And yeah, I was just glad to be there as a witness and, you know, help in some sort of way.
What a nice story. So give us your kind of your take on the course then, because you were running obviously comfortably. What did you think? How did it feel as a marathon course?
Yeah, I've got to say the support was a lot better than what I thought it would be. Like, there was a lot of people out. I did it a couple of years ago, but just like did parts of the relay and then just kept going around the course. But I felt like, you know, coming back onto the Ormo Road, especially when you get off the like that towpathy bit and you come over the bridge, felt like you're at the, you know, Alpe d'Huez in the Tour de France or, you know, some cycling race, people really closely packed in, clapping you on and screaming in your face. And yeah, but with regards to the whole course, I mean, I think it's really good. Like, it's, you know, there's no super technical bits, I don't think. There's one hill coming out of the waterworks, like that's short, sharp sort of downhill just after 20 miles. It's a bit of a bugger, but yeah, no, I really enjoyed it actually. I'd definitely love to race it at some point. And
it's certainly not a fast course. I mean, I was tracking the race at different points, and there's a lot of sections whereby it kind of would look flat to the naked eye, but it's kind of like a kind of gradual hill. So I think the bit through Crumlin Road up through the Old Park Road, through that bit of North Belfast, just when you're starting to get tired, is pretty tough.
Yeah,
and then some guys were saying the downhill was tough on the legs then once you went down Dunkern Gardens.
That's what I was going to say. Everyone talks about the hills in Belfast Marathon and you think they're implying the uphills, but actually I found the downhills were the harder part because, you know, you're not really wanting to run that fast down the hills because your legs are a bit smashed. So yeah, it's kind of, it was tough in that respect, but this gets a bit quiet and lonely when you sort of get down to sea level again and you're in the city. Like, obviously there's people around, but I just, that kind of last sort of section of the course there before you get to the Ormo Road kind of feels a bit like you're just in a holding pattern waiting for the end. And it's just, yeah, I imagine that can, a lot of demons can follow runners through there, but yeah, hopefully most of them overcame those and got through okay, relatively unscathed. Relay results. So I'll just read these out really quick. The all-male relay first place was won by North Belfast. Second place was Lagan Valley C. And then We Run Belfast was third. So well done to all of those guys there. Females, it was BH Ladies. They came first. And then Annandale Girls came second. And Roadrunners AC came third. And then the mixed race, so Lagan Valley E, they came first. Running Bubble came second. And Wasteland Track Club came third. So, yeah, really exciting day for everyone, I think. And, yeah, just the relay happening and everything is just really, really, really good day in Belfast.
So, Danny, maybe if we run the interview that you've just done with Gladys and we'll get a little bit of her perspective on the day.
Yep, 100%. We'll play the interview now with Gladys and we'll catch up after that. Very excited with the guest who's on the podcast this week. We have Gladys Ganuel, American but Northern Irish based marathoner and runner, very well known in Northern Ireland and across Ireland. How are you, Gladys? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and you enjoyed a nice weekend of sunshine and recovery.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, I was glad the marathon wasn't this weekend because we would all been suffering even more than as the norm. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, just to sort of, I guess, give the listeners a bit more of information about yourself. So, obviously, you're a very accomplished runner, Commonwealth Games athlete. Is it once or twice? The once?
Once in the Commonwealth Games and twice in the European Championships for Ireland.
Yep. And all in the marathon distance?
And one of the Europeans was a half marathon because it was Olympic year.
Okay, interesting. I didn't know they did that. All right. Well, yeah, there you go.
Makes
and
sense.
Also, yeah, I guess, you know, away from running, you're also a professor at Queen's in the sociology of religion. And yeah, you're the fourth place runner at the Belfast Marathon this year overall for the women and first Northern Irish athlete home. So look, congratulations. How did you find the race in the end?
Well, yes. So it went all right. It was a good race. It was one of the good ones. I mean, there's some things I'm not entirely happy with, but I mean, the one thing you haven't mentioned yet is that I'm 47 years old and I ran a minute faster than I did last year. So you're never going to complain with that result. So I'll just put that out there. But I mean, I suppose the thing is, like, roughly for the last, well, since about 2011, I've basically been trying to run marathons at 6 minute per mile pace, right? So I go out and do these long paced runs at 6 minute per mile pace. And I'm still kind of able to do that. So every marathon now that I go into, I'm just like, well, I'm going to see if I can do that as long as the weather is reasonable, you know. And the start of the race in Belfast, the weather was reasonable. You know, it was overcast. It wasn't too warm. You knew it was going to get humid later in the day. So I just thought, well, I'm going to just try to do that pace here. And there were some men that were running that pace. So that was fine. That was really helpful. I suppose by the time you got to nearly halfway, that's when the humidity I felt started to seep in. And I was running with a group of guys and we passed halfway and then a wee bit on up the road, you turn right onto Finicky Road. And then all of a sudden it was only myself and Stephen Duncan and Neil Weir. And I was like, where did everybody go? But I think at that point, that was where people really probably at that point were starting to feel it. And going down the downhills through Andersonstown and stuff, I was not getting faster, which ideally you would be going those now. So I was just keeping it up. And I just thought to myself, well, this is going to get tough here in the second half, you know, and I lost a bit more time than I wanted to in the hills in North Belfast. And I was 24, 25 weren't great. I was, you know, I slowed a bit in those. But like I say, yeah, given the humidity and that, I am not going to complain about the result.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, with regards to the marathon course, a lot of people worry about the hills, but for me, I mean, I was in the 3 hour group, just running with a few of the road runners guys. There are hills definitely, but I think it's the downhills that really, really hurt you as opposed to the uphills. Like in the later stages, when you're trying to sort of keep a solid pace and your legs are screaming out, you're going downhill. That's when I find it gets a bit tough. So yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, no, it's amazing. We can talk maybe a bit more about the race, a little bit later in this here, but I just thought, you know, would you mind telling us a bit about yourself and your youth when you got into running and, you know, where you grew up?
Yeah, so I grew up in rural Maine in the United States. So Maine is the state on the East Coast that borders Canada, okay? And there's only about 800 people in my town. So this is sort of really, it's not the America you see on TV, you know?
Yeah.
And, in Maine, basketball is a big sport. So everybody's really into basketball. It's sort of the equivalent is like the GAA here for some communities, you know, like everybody is out for the high school basketball tournament. So I was really keen into basketball, you know, and as I was about to enter high school, so secondary school, we didn't have athletics for primary school children where I grew up, but they had cross country and that's all they had at the high school. They didn't have indoor outdoor track at that time. And I knew a lot of the girls that played basketball did cross country to get in shape for basketball. And so that seemed to me like a good idea. And I wasn't yet ready to go into high school as my last year of, we do K-8 in the in the rural America. So whatever eighth grade is before you go into high school, and high school's 4 years. And the high school running coach knew I was interested. So he let me train with the high school team and like every, you know, all the adults that needed to agree with this, that it was fine, you know? So I suppose I was about, I don't know, 12, 13 maybe then when I started
running. Training with those who were maybe 14 or 15 sort of age.
Yeah. And you ran 5 kilometers straight away. That was what the girls' cross-country distance was in Maine. And I had a really good endurance base anyway because I had an active childhood because I played basketball a lot. I don't know how old I was, maybe 11, 12. I read all these books about like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and how when they were kids, they played basketball 6 or 7 hours a day. So I was like, oh, well, sure, I'll do that. So I was outside shooting hoops for like my childhood, like pretty much a day's work, you know. And I also did like manual labor, blueberry harvesting when I was a kid from the time I was 8 years old. So like my endurance base was amazing for a, you know, a 12-year-old probably. So I was able to, yeah, I could pretty much run 3 miles without stopping at the very start. And
And
I
was
just
it sort
went from
of,
there.
did you it sort of hit the ground running, so to speak? Or were people sort of, did they see that you maybe had a bit of a talent for it, or did you have to sort of work your way into it?
Well, the thing was, where I grew up, the culture is very much about hard work. Okay. So people are like lobster fishermen, or you're breaking blueberries, or you were working in the wintertime, going out in the woods and getting tips off the balsam fir trees to make wreaths. Everybody has so many jobs just to get by. So the culture is very much values hard work. And, you know, so to be a respected member of the culture, you want to work hard. So that people never told me I was talented ever. They just said, you work really hard, you know, and that is what I suppose stuck with me. I never thought of myself as actually talented. They just said, well, Gladys, you work hard and you work hard, you'll get the results. Now, obviously, you have to have some genetic talent, but you don't, that doesn't register with you when the culture around is really into the hard work and the physical hard work as well, because of all the like lobster fishing is a seriously hard work and manual labor job. A lot of people did that. Clam digging, you know, working out in the woods. You know, people worked physically hard in the place where I grew up, and that was the majority of the people, you know.
Sounds like a tough environment to compete in if everyone who's running the same race as you is a really hard worker and has grown up in that community. So, yeah, no, that's amazing. Okay, so that's sort of how you got into running and where it began. So it was sort of from there, you, I guess, went to high school in that local town, and then you graduated high school and you got some offers to maybe go. Did you study at Providence? Is that right?
So I ran 4 years across country at the high school. By the time I was a had done 2 years of high school, they got an outdoor track team. A guy from another part of the state got a job teaching history, and he started a track team at my school. So I had track the last 2 years, and I went off and I did the foot. It was the Foot Locker cross country back then, and so you had to compete against all the best girls from New England. So I did that a couple years, and my senior year, I made the national meet and stuff like that. So you're going to get good offers from, you know, universities for scholarships if you make the National Foot Locker meet. And you know, in the end, I chose Providence. I suppose I liked Ray Tracy the best, the coaches, and I also I felt really comfortable on the campus. You know, Providence was obviously a much bigger city than where I grew up, but it was a small campus. It's only at the time about 3,500 students, so it's a lot smaller than, you know, I went and visited some of these huge American universities, and you're just like, oh my goodness, you know, you would be lost there. Whereas in Providence, it was much smaller community.
And but where is Providence located? Sorry.
Oh, it's in Rhode Island, so that would still be within New England. It's a southern New England state. It's kind of underneath Massachusetts. It's really tiny, the smallest geographical state. And there were loads of Irish people in Providence. So Ray Tracy, the coach, you know, from Waterford, brother of John Tracy, Olympic silver medalist, and the assistant coach at the time was Andy Ronan, who but he ran some ridiculously fast marathon time 1 year at Boston Marathon, you know. So he was also a very good athlete himself, and they were the two coaches, and loads of Irish teammates like Marie McMahon, Maria McCambridge, Susan Mernan, they were all on the team
Okay.
when I was there.
Okay. And so you started there in 1995. Was it a very well developed athletics program there, or was it sort of up and coming?
We won the NCAA championship that year, so in cross country. I can't say that that was down to me in any way, shape, or form. That was the three girls I've just mentioned and a few more, you know. But no, I mean, Ray had a great program then, you know, and they've won another national championship in the intervening years. So it's always been a very strong school for cross country. And that was actually the other thing that appealed to me about it was a small team. It wasn't a huge track and field team. So basically, the focus was on cross country and doing well at the national meet as a team. And then indoor and outdoor track, we really only had distance athletes. We didn't have throwers, jumpers, sprinters. And the track seasons were used to develop you as endurance athletes. It was an endurance high level elite program. It wasn't like somewhere where they have elites across all the events, if that makes sense. Yeah.
So did you dabble in a bit of track racing and things like that as well, or was mainly just focusing on cross?
No, you ran indoor and outdoor track, and obviously my best event was the 10,000 meters because I was
Yeah,
never
the
blessed
strength
with
and...
particular. Yeah.
Okay, absolutely. How was your experience at the NCAA cross country? I mean, for a lot of people, that is the pinnacle of college track and field, I guess, or running. So I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was never a great NCAA Division I runner. I was solid. I wasn't ever top 20 at cross country or anything like that. And the year we won NCAAs my freshman year, I was the seventh runner on the team that went out to the national championships, only five score. So, I didn't score in the meet. I actually ran well enough in the meet. But I mean, it was amazing to be part of a team that won a national championship. I mean, like, it's was like the thrill of it, and back whenever it was, I guess the 20th was, I can't remember, the 20th or the 25th anniversary, we did like the Zoom call, and everybody was saying how there were no mobile phones, so we had to go find a pay phone and phone home to tell
Yeah,
the other
everyone
people on the
take
team what had
turns.
happened. You know what I mean? It's like literally that really was another century. So like I didn't ever make All America in cross country or anything like that. Probably my best NCAA result was my junior year in the 10,000 meters. I think it was like 13th or something like that at the national meet in 10,000 meters. So, and I won two ECAC conference titles at NCAA, not NCAA, ECAC. It's called something different now at 10,000 meters. So those were what, some of my better runs, And back when I ran the cross country, it was only 5K as well. So that's very short for me, even then.
I'm trying to think, what are the women race now? Is it 8K or is it six?
It might be six. I'm not entirely sure. Yeah.
Well, look, it's really always good to watch those events when they're happening over in the US. I love popping them on, getting hyped for our own cross country scene here in Northern Ireland, even though it's maybe not the same thing or same level. I do want to touch on one thing. In your last year at Providence, you won the Walter Byers Award for top female student athlete in the NCAA. And I believe that's the most elite award of recognition in the NCAAs, and it's not just for running. So how did that sort of come about?
I say my academics pulled that one for me. So what did I think, I'm trying to remember now. So grade point average in the States, it's all different from the way you do university here. A perfect is 4.0. So I graduated with a 3.98 in political science. And political science is considered a tough enough degree and within the social sciences. So I had the good, the good academic achievement. So what they do when they decide that, they weigh up the academic achievement with the athletic achievement. And I think, I had qualified for the NCAA as an individual. I had been on an NCAA championship team. I benefited a lot from being on really good teams, teams that were top 10 at NCAA cross country every 4 years. So that helped me because I was part of those cross country teams. So even if some of the other athletes were up, I was up against were like better star athletes. I had the academics and then I had that team element from the cross country that probably helped. And to get the award, see, the award was important, not just because it's like an award, but you got 2 years scholarship for graduate school. And like my family, maybe you can tell from the description of where I grew up, didn't have money to send me to university. So if I got a 2 year scholarship for a master's or whatever, that would be amazing. So they had these finalists and you had to go down. It was at Disneyland. They flew you to Disneyland to be interviewed.
Oh, wow,
So you had to go
nice.
through this whole interview process, right? So I did well enough in the interview, and then after they interview the finalists, they announce the winner and so forth. So that scholarship allowed me then, I chose to come into Ireland and do my master's. So I did the master's in politics at UCD with that funding. Yeah.
And did you run at UCD a little bit as well?
Yeah, like I wasn't on the UCD team. I joined in Dundrum South Dublin, mainly because Maria McCambridge, that was her club, so she was with me in Providence. So she literally like collected me at the airport when I arrived in Providence, or not arrived in Providence, arrived in Dublin. And she had come back and was running for DSD. So I ran a good few years for them. We won some Irish titles, but I couldn't. So long ago now, these races, I was saying to someone, they're so important at the time, but then when you get my age, you don't even remember the results anymore.
But before we leave the US, I'm curious, do you remember who the male winner was that year?
Oh, I can picture him. I can picture him. He was also a runner. He's also running. Did you look it up?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, the I think his name's Samuel Calvin Thigpen from University of Mississippi. So I noticed that that was one of the only years in the list of recipients where both the male and female winners were from track and field. So yeah, that's interesting. And yeah, final question: do you still follow basketball? Who's your team, if so?
Yeah, well, my teams when I was growing up, I liked the LA Lakers, and in NCAA, I liked Duke University. But once I came over here and got studying and doing everything, I really kind of, the basketball fell on the back burner. I couldn't tell you anything that's going on now, but
yeah,
I have fond memories of watching Magic Johnson and Bobby Hurley. They were my favorite players.
Yeah. Yeah, look, we better stick to running because my knowledge of basketball is not immense. So, no, fantastic. Look, I guess, you know, this brings us quite nicely onto you sort of arriving in Ireland and getting running here. And eventually, obviously, you moved from Dublin up to Belfast. Did you sort of start working at Queen's at that point in time?
No. So I did my master's and PhD at UCD. And then my first job was actually at a place called Irish School of Ecumenics. And it's part of Trinity College Dublin, but they had a campus in Belfast. Now, people are sitting there thinking, what on earth is ecumenics, right? Okay. So
yeah.
Ecumenics, it's basically the movement for Christian unity and dialogue between other religions, Christianity and other religions. So it had been set up as an interdisciplinary school by a Jesuit priest in Dublin in like the 1970s. So it, at the time when I joined it, it had a program in Belfast that through Trinity College awarded a master's in reconciliation studies, it was called. So I'm a social scientist, so it had myself and a theologian on staff, and we had, you know, a cohort of master's students that did this master's in reconciliation studies. So I worked there for 9 years, I suppose, my first 9 years in Belfast. And then because it was like a small campus, I always kind of wanted to get back to a bigger university. Now, of course, we were part of Trinity, so you could go down to Dublin, right? And that's a big campus, but I wasn't going to be doing that all the time. So I used to keep watching the jobs at Queen's because I knew I wanted to stay in Belfast. So whenever a job came up at Queen's, it looked like I could apply for it. You know, I did. So I suppose I moved over to Queen's 2015, just a few months before my son was born. So I've been at Queen's since then.
Okay, excellent. And was that a similar time for when you signed with North Belfast?
No. So what was, if I can remember, when I first came to Belfast, I joined Abbey. Now, do you remember Abbey? Were you about when Abbey was a club?
Here, yeah, I've only been here for about 3 years, so I'm not entirely sure.
So Abbey could be lost in the midst of time. So there was actually a woman I met in Dublin who went to Trinity, who, Jenny, I forget her surname now, but she was a member of Abbey. You know, she was from the north. So at one point I'd come up and done a cross-country race in Belfast, and she'd introduced me to the coach in Abbey, who was Bobby Ray. And he was one of the guys responsible for bringing like the world cross country to Belfast in 1998. Mm-hmm. You know, he was very kind of well-known leader, I suppose, in athletics in Northern Ireland. So he was kind of the patriarch of that club. And there were a lot of mostly young athletes. So Paul Pollock was in that club on the men's side. That's probably the most well-known person from Abbey. So I joined Abbey, and then Bobby Ray died. What was that, around 2007 probably? Mm-hmm. And most of the people in the club were kind of in their 20s, and it was a small club. We didn't really have the infrastructure, people starting out in their careers, to keep it going. So the club kind of folded, and I at that point I joined North Belfast. A lot of the guys from Abbey joined Annadale, but I'd already met Matt Shields. I'd run a couple good marathons, and I'd met him and knew his I suppose pedigree from coaching and having run marathons himself. So North Belfast seemed the obvious place. And I think, I'm trying to get the timeline right here, but I'd started doing marathon runs with North Belfast before Abbey had folded, you know, because Abbey didn't really have a marathon group. You know, they were more focused on cross country and track. And again, my age profile was a bit older than them because I'd already finished graduate school. Some of them had just left Queen's, you know. So I joined North after that. Yeah.
Okay. And has Matt been coaching you ever since that point in time?
Well, pretty much. And I mean, and also like Ray Tracy for a lot of years gave me lots of advice for marathon training. So for a long time, I ran things by Ray in terms of training for the marathon. And, you know, things Matt and Ray would say lined up pretty well, you know.
Yeah.
And you can't really go wrong if they're both saying the same things, you know.
Okay, very good. So with regards to the marathon, I'm kind of assuming that that is your favorite distance. It seems like you've, as you mentioned, have run a lot of marathons around that 240 or just either side. Your PB is 2:36:40, which you ran in Dublin in 2019. Was that a real epic day for yourself?
Yes, that was a great day. The weather was perfect, okay? And how often you get a perfect October day in Dublin, you know? And I knew I was in good shape because I had run Belfast that year, in May, and that was the year the course was long, and I'd still run 2:39 on the long course. And people were saying, that equates to low 2:37, probably. Do you know what I mean? So I felt like I didn't get the credit for my 2:37 or whatever the heck it would have been if it had, but so I knew I was in good shape from that. And training had gone, well, as far as I remember leading up to Dublin that year. There weren't any major sick, well, I got sick once, but there was nothing major, And I always had a few guys who could do the marathon pace runs with me. So whether that was Marty Ray or Eddie Cook or further back, Alan O'Hara used to do them with me. So I had those guys as well that helped me do those long runs leading up to Dublin that year. And on the so the day before at the technical meeting, they said for the Irish one we'll have a pacer. So Declan Power from one of the Dublin clubs was going to pace. And I sort of said to him, "Do you want to do 6 minute pace?" Some of the other girls weren't actually at the meeting, so I kind of got to corner him, and he's like, "Yeah, 6 minute pace sounds fine, And we went out on the start there, so Declan was there, and then the other Irish girls, and he started out at 6 minute pace. So I'm running with him, but a bunch of the other Irish girls had gone on ahead, and so we were kind of hanging back a wee bit from them. And as we got into the Phoenix Park after a couple of miles, he's like, "Well, we were going to run 6 minutes pace. That's what we said at the technical meeting with the people who were there." He's like, "Do you want to go up to those girls?" And I'm like, "Well, no, none of them have ever run under 2:36. I don't know why they're." I didn't say all this. This is far too many words. I just said no, basically. But I'm thinking in my head, they've not run under that time. They're running 5:55s. There's a lot of hills in the second half of this course. I think I'm good, So I just stayed at that pace, and Declan was great. We just went, and I followed him basically. And I remember we got to the part. I knew Dublin well enough, right? Because I lived in Dublin for a while. And I'd also a few times with the Marathon Mission over the years would have gone down, and we would have run on the course, the Marathon Mission athletes. But we got to the part near Bushy Park, and there's still a long way left in the race at that point. I don't know where you're at, 16 miles or something like that. But there's a little downhill, and some of the like the men who had been with us, they started to pull away. And again, he's like, "Well, do you want to go?" And I'm like, "Well, no." I think to myself, there's still a really long way in this race. So, a couple times I made the decision just as to not go the way other people were going. And then a mile later, I said to Declan, because I after the hill in Milltown, I was like, "Are there more hills?" And he's like, "Yes, there are." Because I don't know that part of the course as well. And then after I said that, he was like, he was only supposed to go, I don't know, I can't remember how far he was supposed to go, but he went 30K with me, at least 31, 30, 32K, somewhere around in there. And he's like, "I'll go a wee bit extra with you." And then after he left me, I just started passing people because everybody was sort of that had gone when I held back,
He
was
didn't want
coming
to take
back
you through that nasty
to
hill at mile 22.
I'm not going to complain about
Yeah.
Declan.
He's doing you a solid. He's like, yeah, I'll take you just to the bottom of that hill there. No, that's brilliant. And so I guess that year, do you remember what you came overall? Were you first Irish home or?
I think I was third. So who won it that year? Who won it? I can't even remember. But I was definitely third because I passed in the last. Well, Laura Graham dropped out. I passed Breech Connolly, and Katrina Jennings was behind me. I think I was always ahead of her, though. I don't think she was ever ahead of me. So I beat two Olympians basically, and the other two, I can't believe I don't remember this. This is embarrassing. I'm so self-focused, right? I just remember me. That
Not at all. No,
particular race.
I think, I mean, as you'll probably allude to later when we maybe chat about Belfast a little bit more, you almost don't know what's happening around you, who's where,
Yeah. So
by the time you finish, so.
Anne Marie McGlynn, I think maybe was second that year, possibly. I don't know. You'd have to look it up.
Look, maybe it just doesn't really matter. This website's not very it's not very easy. Well, look, okay, at the end of the day, A few of those ladies that you maybe thought were punching above their weight a little bit did end up coming back, and you sort of moved through the field a little bit.
Yeah.
Finished in 2:36:40. So that was your PB. And if I'm correct, you're actually running pretty close to that PB. I know last year in Dublin, you ran, 237? That was your second fastest time ever.
Yeah, like it's like 237.06, you know, and like Matt Shields thinks that's probably my best race. He thinks it's better than my PB because like I didn't have Declan Power pace me for
the whole thing.
So, and the weather wasn't quite as good either. The weather the day of my PB was just like perfect, still cool weather, you know.
Last year it was raining, and towards the end it was raining a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't bad weather last year, but it wasn't perfect weather. And, you know, I was pacing myself most of the race. Although, to be fair, last year in Dublin, I had a good group of guys to run with for most of the race. And a lot of them were from Ulster, you know, from Northern Ireland or the other counties in Ulster. So you felt, you know, you were being pulled along by the men in the race also. So it wasn't like I was pacing on my own. It was a good run this past year in Dublin. And I hadn't broken 2:40 in a long time. So I hadn't broken 2:40 since actually Dublin in 2019. I had a couple marathons when I came out of lockdown where I got these excruciating stitches. And they were just horrible, you know, they were just horrible because you're running like miles and miles and miles with a stitch and it's really painful. So I sort of thought to myself, well, maybe my days of running sub 2:40 are over. But then I could still go out and train and do the paced runs. So I was like, well, I'm just going to try it again. And I just went out and started doing it, and it lasted instead of, you know, getting an excruciating stitch or some other disaster, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Was it a big confidence booster going into Dublin last year when you ran so well in the Belfast half?
Yes. Yeah. I hadn't run a half marathon that well in years and years either. Like,
so you ran 76:16 last year in that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like my PB in the half is from before the super shoes. It's from like 2013 or something. And so I never got the super shoe boost for anything except the marathon because I guess I'm old. Do you know what I mean? And you, over the shorter distances, you don't get the, you know, you're going to lose speed anyway. So I hadn't really run a good half since 2013, maybe. To be able to run that well in the half, I thought, well, you know, give it a lash here. Yeah.
And look, it can't just be the shoes. I mean, what do you think? Yeah, I sort of see this as a resurgence of form, you know, like do you feel like your marathon PB could be in danger in the next year or two?
Well, if I could be bothered to go to Berlin or somewhere, maybe, but
yeah, Valencia maybe at the end of the year.
No. I'm a bit I'm a professor now, so you've got a lot of responsibilities and a child and various other things. I think part of it, you know, the shoes make a huge difference, and the shoes make a difference not just in the race, but they make a difference because I do my paced runs in them, and they make a difference because you recover so much better wearing those shoes than you did in the olden days. So you're recovering better, so you can train harder. And that's why, you know, at the beginning, the super shoes are making a difference. And then a few years down the road, they're making a huge difference because everybody's been training in them for 5 years or however long it's been, you know? So there's that. And then also, I never really did like S&C until just before the Commonwealth Games. We didn't have a special S&C program at Providence or anything like that. And I got doing the S&C when I was in the Sports Institute, Northern Ireland. And I could feel it benefited me in terms of core strength, upper body strength, et cetera, et cetera. So even after the Commonwealth Games, when I was no longer an athlete in Sinai, I have an S&C coach that I've worked with now for a good number of years. And like, I'm way stronger than I was like when I was 20 in terms of my core and like upper body. I mean, I know I don't look like a bodybuilder, but you know, being able to do pull-ups and press-ups with weights on your back, all this sort of stuff, I'm much stronger that way and quite durable that way. So I think that has made a difference, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you probably don't follow women's marathoning in Australia, but Sinead Diver, she has the Australian record and, you know, she's around about 45 or so. So
yeah,
it seems like, you're not alone in, running your PBs or, you know, close to it as you sort of get a bit older as well. So no, it's fantastic to see. So moving on from there to the Belfast Marathon, were you sort of hoping for the result that you got this year? Was that the plan or?
Well, I went out at 6 minute pace, so I wanted to run 6 minute pace, right? And I got slower, So, I was a bit annoyed at the end that I didn't get under 2:40 again. But like I say, at the end of the day, I'm not complaining about it because I was faster than last year. It was humid. After like about 20, 21 miles, I had lost all the men I was with in terms of, I was kind of on my own. There were people ahead of me, but I wasn't catching them. And there were people behind me, but they didn't. Well, Neil Weir, he was with me. And then I thought he was gone. And then he nearly beat me at the end. So he must have been having a resurgence when I coming around, Ormo Park. But so the last bit of the race, I was on my own and fading a bit. So it wasn't, it wasn't perfect, but like I said, I'm not, you can't be moaning about that,
Yeah, 100%. Well, I know that you did actually win the marathon in Belfast outright a few years ago. So that must have been a pretty special day. It was do you have a particular memory from your running career that stands out as, a real highlight?
Well, I mean, I suppose there are a few. I mean, the two marathons in Dublin where I've run my best times, I mean, those were great days, and of course winning the NCAA championship with Providence, and even going back to high school, the state championship, we won state cross country. My school had never won a state championship in anything except for girls, except softball. So, all those things, I suppose, those would be the main highlights, I
Yeah.
guess.
Returning to the cross and winning the senior
Oh.
last year.
Oh no, in the Commonwealth Games, how could I forget that? That was actually
Of
probably the
course.
best thing ever. The Commonwealth Games were amazing. And then the cross country. Yes, Seamus shamed me into running the cross country.
No, he was actually on the pod just after that, and he was gushing about the result, and I think it was a real, by the sounds of things, it was a real good day for North, especially the women's team. So yeah, that's brilliant. So I'm curious about the Neil Weir thing. Did you exchange any words when you stuck the dagger in and left him for dead after Waterworks?
No, I didn't actually. He just kind of dropped off unnoticed. But he was so helpful for most of the race, And he was with me in Dublin for a lot of the race too this year. It's like I was saying to him afterwards, it's like he's my personal pacer, and unintentionally. His last year in Belfast, we were in within like 5 seconds of each other too. So for like the last three marathons, he's kind of been around me and been a very helpful person to key off,
Okay. So if he goes out and runs 2:35, then you have to run a few seconds either side of that if he sets out at that
Well,
pace.
he ran 2:34 in Tokyo this year. And when was that? February, March?
Did he run so fast in Tokyo?
Think so. I think he did,
That's right. Yeah, he was telling me he went out on 2:30 pace and then maybe faded a little bit, but yeah, no.
Well,
Oh, yeah.
geez, I won't go 2:30 pace if he's gonna do
Yeah,
that.
you're not far off making an Olympic qualifier at that point. What are your thoughts on the current sort of qualifications? I mean, I think the women's marathon qualifier is 2:26.
Well, I mean, it makes sense if they want a small field, which they apparently do. The last Olympics I could have potentially qualified for in Rio, they wanted a bigger field, so the standard has to be easier, obviously. So if that's your decision to make a small field, obviously the standards got to be higher. And I mean, the standards have risen. I mean, it's a different thing now than it was like in 2016, really, in terms of the times that people across the world are running. So it is what it is.
100%. Yeah, 208.10 for the men and 2:26 for the women. So, look, it's going to be pretty epic showdown in Paris. Are there any events that you're hoping to watch? Are you a big watcher of the Olympics or?
Well, everybody is, I suppose, to a certain extent. I mean, of course, I like the marathons, but you got to watch the men's 1500 meters, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, especially with the way that is right now, it's just so exciting. Yeah, I think the Bowman Mile is coming up pretty soon, which has a pretty stacked field. All of the probably Olympic favorites are in that field. So, yeah, really looking forward to watching that too. I was curious in the build up for a marathon. I mean, I'm a big marathon guy, and yeah, I'm just curious. What works for you in the lead up with the training? Are there any sessions that you love to do?
Well, I mean, basically, it is those long marathon paced runs. So it depends when I start those. I don't know. 10 or 11 weeks out, and you might start with one that's 10, 8 to 10 miles long. When I was younger, I would have worked them up to like 15, 16 miles. Now I tend to max out at 13 miles. So you're doing 13 miles at pace within a run that's 19 miles long or something like that. So if I get a good few of those in where I have run the pace, I feel confident that I can do the thing, And the last few marathon cycles, a lot of my speed work has been on hills. And I feel hills, especially for an older athlete, are safe. It's a safe type of speed work, because you're running up the hill. It's
Low
less
impact.
pounding. Yeah, it's less pounding going up the hill. And they're hard, So it's something that's challenging mentally. And challenging because you're just running up the same hill, it's like, what is his name, Sisyphus or whatever. So you've got the mental challenge and the challenge of running up the hill. So I do a lot of hills, different places, the Falls Park or Lagmore or Clement Wilson Park, all those sorts of those different hills around Belfast that you can torture yourself on.
Yeah, no, there are a few. Glencairn as well. That's not a bad one for a slightly longer hill rep. Yeah.
Yeah,
What kind
I
of
haven't done it.
I
Sorry,
was
go
gonna say,
ahead.
what kind of mileage do you sort of aim to go for in like a peak week during the marathon build up?
The last few years, it's been about like 75. And again, like prior to the pandemic, when because my PBs there in 2019 was just before the pandemic, I was hitting closer to like 85 a week then. So I am running a wee bit less. But as I was saying to someone before Belfast, I'm like, I've been running for 35 years. How many more miles do I have to run here? I'll keep it at 75 for now.
If it's not broken, don't fix it, I guess. So, I guess, just to finish, do you have any running idols that you really, you look up to?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Maine, right? So Joan Benoit-Samuelson is from Maine. So the woman who won the first women's Olympic marathon. So you can't help but having grown up in that place, to have looked up to her, really. And I mean, I suppose the thing about her, like Maine is famous for its work ethic, so that I like the hardworking runner, as it were, And there's been, loads of people, teammates and so on and so forth, through my career that kind of model that. So you would always have respect and admiration for people like that as well. And I mean, like Paula Radcliffe as well. She was famous for torturing herself, I suppose, in terms of 120-mile weeks at altitude. And I mean, I remember watching when she did the Marathon World Record in London, and like no step of that race looked comfortable. When you used to watch her run, she never looked comfortable. You knew she was just giving it absolutely everything. Like, and then you remember like the Olympics where she, one year in the 10,000, she just paced around every athlete. In the end, three Ethiopians went by her and she got fourth place or something like that. And you're just like, this woman has just given absolutely everything, And there's something, there's, I mean, I think to get the best out of yourself, obviously, as an endurance athlete, you've got to train, you've got to enjoy running, but you've also got to just come to terms with that it's going to hurt and just accept that. And I remember one year at the ECAC Track and Field Championship. So Keith Kelly was in Providence when I was there as well. He's from Ireland and he won an NCAA cross country. So, I mean, if you're winning that, you're a good athlete. But I remember, I think I was running the 10,000, he was running it as well. And he's like, it's not that you're nervous for the competition, you're nervous for the pain you're going to go through. And I thought, that's exactly right. So for me, part of the training is training my brain really just to accept that. And you don't get it right in every race. For especially the marathon, there's some marathons where, you just, as much as you try to train your mind as much as your body, it's just not quite there. But it's the marathons where the mind is there as well as you have the fitness, that's when you get the best out of yourself. And I suppose I still enjoy the challenge of that, really.
Battling the when the mind is telling the body to stop and using the mind to overcome the pain of the body, I guess.
Not even overcome it, just I think, see, that's the thing. If you fight against it, you're doomed. You use too much energy. You just got to accept it and live with it. Live with the suffering, I guess. I'm
Dance
making this sound
with
so
the
attractive.
dance with the pain.
Yes, yeah.
Is that sort of something that in, when it gets tough in a marathon, is that something that you think about, or do you have anything else that you sort of use to help you get through?
Well, I mean, I suppose it is that thing just to remind myself to accept it. This is what it is supposed to feel like. Don't be surprised that this hurts. Do you know? Yeah. And the other thing about it is you just have to control your mind, not to think about anything else except the present. Okay, so it's almost like a type of meditation, right? So that, within religious traditions, if you're meditating, you are totally present in the moment. And if it's accessing a flow state, basically. So if you get that flow state in a marathon, something that's taken you 2 hours and 37 minutes, it feels like it passes nearly in the blink of an eye. And you suffered a lot, but it feels like it just passes. The time gets warped or something like that. It's like that's an amazing thing as a human being that you can do that and experience that. Yeah.
Yeah, it is amazing what the body and the mind as well is capable of at the end of the day. I remember thinking that I ran in London a month or so ago, and yeah, sort of really suffered the last sort of 5 mile. And yeah, I thought to myself after, like, wow, I was hurting so badly, and like I still got to the end. And it's just, yeah, you really get to know yourself when you do an event like that.
And even sometimes, like mentally, like before Dublin this year, so Lizzie Lee, from Cork, was doing commentary. Like before the race, she said to me, she's like, "Gladys, I wouldn't want to be racing you today." And that was a really nice thing to say. But then a few times in the race, when it was a really difficult moment, that came into my mind, and I thought, and it helped me, So sometimes even I got that phrase on the start line, pretty much, basically. But things like that can also be a really helpful go-to, I suppose, in the marathon. And sometimes I have scripts like that prepared ahead. But to get one on the start line that's particularly good, that was a really, really good thing this past year too.
Yeah, definitely. Are you a big advocate of using a lot of nutrition during a marathon?
I take gels and I drink that Marten stuff, and I make sure my gels have caffeine. I think that's probably the
Every
most
gel?
important thing. Every gel, yeah. I have a very
Yeah.
strong stomach.
Must be
I
absolutely buzzing after a race.
know. I was at this barbecue after the marathon this year, and people were like, "Weren't you tired?" And I'm like, "I just had 415 milligrams of caffeine."
Geez, it sounds like I don't know if you've ever tried an ultra marathon, but sounds like you'd go well in one of those as well.
Yeah, I had entered Comrades the year the plague, and then I had flights booked and everything, and then there was a plague. But yeah, I don't know if that will happen. We'll see.
Do you have any plans for the next couple of years or next year with regards to running? Obviously, you ran Belfast a week ago, so right now it's about recovery. Are you looking to do Dublin again this year?
I just take it one step at a time, because see, I'm sort of like my own personal science experiment now that I'm this age. It's sort of like, well, how much? But I feel as if, like, if you didn't do a marathon cycle, I feel I would never get it back again. So I wouldn't, as long as I don't get injured or seriously ill, I'll just go in and do another marathon cycle for the autumn. And to me, I enjoy it now. I mean, I'm not going to make an international squad anymore. I'm not going to run 2:26, but to run the national championships is it's a nice thing to do. And the folks that run the Dublin Marathon have invested a lot in Irish athletics over the years, and it's a really good event. So if I survive another cycle, that is most likely what I'll do,
Yeah, definitely. And that PB, you're not far off that marathon PB as well as age records and things like that. I'm not sure if saying 3 to 4 years, you might be able to set a women's 50 record.
Whenever, because I set whatever the over 45 record after Dublin, and Lizzie said something, "Oh, that's well done." I'm like, "Well, just wait for Anne Marie to come up and beat
She a big rival of yours, or you guys have a good
Oh,
sort
no,
of
she's far too fast.
I imagine you guys have had a few tussles over the years. She was only probably a minute or so ahead in Belfast half last year.
Sure, but I was never, she's a better athlete than I am. My PBs aren't at that standard, so.
Yeah, I can't even I don't even know what her PBs are off the top of my head, but no, she's a fearsome runner. And
Yeah, very tough.
Definitely must be somewhat of a nice thing to hear occasionally. Say if you're going to Dublin and she's decided to go to Berlin or something, like, okay, that's one less person there. So no, excellent. Well, look, I think that basically rounds us out. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And I know there'll be a lot of people listening who would have really enjoyed that chat. So Thanks again, and hopefully I see you in a race or maybe out running at some point.
Yes, and it's still bothering me that I can't remember the results from the 2019 Dublin Marathon. So I'm going to go look it up.
That's a good idea. All right. Have a nice evening, Gladys. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
So Danny, I wasn't obviously sitting in on the interview, but there's something I wanted to ask you about it. Did you make her aware of the fact that she had been your nemesis for a while?
I didn't. I decided to leave that out of the general conversation. She's a fierce competitor, and I've raced around her a little bit. Obviously in Belfast half marathon, and then she beat me in Dublin. I didn't mention that, but it was fantastic chatting to her. And yeah, she's just got such a rich history with running, and she's very passionate about all she does for work as well. And she's just getting better with age. I was sort of saying to her, and running within 20 seconds of a marathon PB, and the years are rolling on, and it's just brilliant to see. So hopefully everyone enjoyed that interview. Should we maybe chat about a few other news items? The postponement of the Belfast 5K. Obviously we had James and Ruth on the podcast to talk about the Joshua Cheptegei appearance in Belfast in this really fast 5K race here, but unfortunately it's been postponed. Do you know anything about that, Michael?
Not really. I mean, there's been a bit of speculation, but I guess the guys are disappointed because I know how hard they were working to try and make it happen. I just hope that it is something they can resurrect next year, because I think it would really add to the local scene. I think it's, when we talked to the guys, I mean, you did get a sense of just how much is involved in putting something of this I suppose size together. Their experience in that they already put on a very successful international half marathon. Let's just hope it's a postponement and not a permanent cancellation.
Yeah, I'm just sad that I won't be able to race Joshua Cheptegei in the end. Who knows what the result could have been. I was really thinking a good block would have me within reach of the win. So, as you said, hopefully, they're back for 2025. Another little news item here that's popped across my desk. There's a really good race that Roadrunners are putting on this year. It's called the Maze Runner. It's on the Friday, the 2nd of August. There's a 3K and kids fun run, a 5K and a 10K. There's cash prizes for all races. The 10K has a cash prize of 250 for the winning man and female, 200 for second, 150 for third, 80 for fourth, and 70 for fifth. And then there's team prizes as well. So £200 plus vouchers, 160, 120 for first, second, and third. Noel McNally has told me that it's a flat and fast course, and he's teeing up some good athletes to get on the roster there. And I think I'm going to toe the line. So if any listeners out there want to come and have a shot at me, then join that 10K and we'll see how we go. Maybe we can put a beer on it. Who knows? A couple of other little bits and bobs. There were a few notable performances recently that we maybe, can quickly chat about. Louis Mallon in the IMC meet in Dublin, he ran a lifetime best of 3:44 in the 1500 meters. And it was actually a B standard for the World Juniors in Peru in August. So another young athlete in Northern Ireland who's coming up the ranks and going better and better.
Yeah, I guess that Louis has made the transition from training within his kind of age peers in Lagan Valley, and has now stepped up to Mark Kirk's group. And obviously he's been around, better, older athletes, and certainly is really holding his own. And that's a really, really fine run. And he's part of that, I suppose, next generation of very good Irish juniors that are coming through. So it's good to see you.
Yeah, at the same meet, Rebecca Rossiter, she took the win in the women's 3,000 meter race, and she was also closely followed by Emma McKee in second. So I think that's Northern Ireland 1 and 2 down there. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, and there were decent performances, although, you know, the times weren't, you know, spectacular. But again, Rebecca changed coaches a couple of years ago, and she had a difficult spell last year, but she's looking good. She's starting to run really well again. And I always think that, you know, with young athletes, you know, when they're 15, 16, they can show great talent, and then making that transition can sometimes be tricky. You're finishing school, all of that kind of stuff. So she, again, is in a good training group with Mark. And I think she could, you know, be a really, really, you know, good athlete over the next couple of years, and become, you know, one of the better female athletes. And I think Emma McCarroll is one of her training buddies as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff happening.
Yeah, one to watch. Another race, I think it actually happened just yesterday, was I think it's like an up-down race on Slieve Donard down in the Mourns.
Okay.
Any guesses who won that one?
Zach, no?
Yeah, it was. It was Zach Hanna. So he won it for maybe the fourth year in a row. And in true Zach Hanna style, he took a tumble as he did last year and cut his knees and his legs up. So, geez, must be absolutely flying down there. He did it in 51 minutes 32. So from the car park to the top and then down.
Yeah, if Zach, you see, he doesn't have the option to not win a race. If he's if there's a race running up and down Slieve Donard, if he didn't win it, he would have to leave County Down and never go back. Yeah. You know?
hand in his County Down citizenship or something. Yeah. No, that's absolutely spectacular. Yeah, actually, I got chatting with a few guys on Saturday morning when we were running up Cave Hill, and it was actually a North Down AC group run with a few of the guys. And one of them, I won't name names, said that he reckoned that he could run to the top of Slieve Donard without walking. He reckoned he could run the whole way up. And I said, I don't think he could. I mean, Zach Hanna, he's, you know, I think that's it's about 4.5 kilometers, so just shy of 3 miles, and he runs that in 33 minutes. So if he's doing it in 33 minutes, I doubt that anyone else could do it quicker or has done it quicker, and I doubt that Zach is running the whole way.
Yeah, and there is obviously, you know, physics comes into it, because there's obviously a point where the gradient gets so steep, and, you know, your feet will be starting to slip, and if you're, you know, I think there is a point there, yeah, and just the legs get really, really fragged as well. So, yeah,
it's very, very technical down there as well in the Mourns. Like 20 miles down there feels like, you know, 30 miles somewhere else, that's for sure.
I've never experienced that feeling, Danny, so I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, even just walking up to the top of Donard is, it's rough enough. But, I think, look, that pretty much probably rounds out the episode. There's one event that I'm looking forward to. It's not a local one. It's the Bowerman Mile. I don't know if you sort of saw who was on the start list for that.
Now, that's in honor of the legendary Bill Bowerman from Oregon and the inventor of the Nike waffle. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So this start list is absolutely insane. So you've got Jakob Ingebrigtsen, Josh Kerr, Jake Whiteman, Jared Nagus, Oliver Hoare, Cole Hocker, Hobbs Kessler, Lamesha Germa, Abel Kipsang, Reynold Chariot. I don't know if Reynold, does he go by Tim? Is that Tim Chariot? I don't know. Anyways, I won't speculate. Jordy Beamish, Matt Centrowitz, Cameron Myers from Australia, Mario Garcia, and Neil Gooley. So there's a bit in there for everyone. You've got Spanish, Australians, British.
And when is that served up, that feast of miling?
That's next weekend, I believe. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so a few Saturday days after this pod goes out.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I'm in Italy, so I'm gonna have to try to watch that somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Man, honestly.
Call it then. Let's put a beer on this, okay. So
yeah. All right. Geez, there's just so many unknowns. I mean, obviously Josh Kerr and Jake Whiteman, the world champ winners from the past couple of years. Jakob has been injured, and this is sort of one of his first races back. Jared Nagus is so good. I mean, I just, could you even pick a winner out of that? I think it will be between Josh and, I honestly don't know, because I want to say Jared Neguse as well, but then Josh Kerr has been going so well, and you just don't know how Jakob Ingebrigtsen's going to run. So I honestly have no idea. But okay, stab in the dark, I will say Cameron Myers, just because I hope he wins, and I'll buy you a beer because I know he won't.
Okay, I'm gonna go for Jakob. I don't think he would run unless he was pretty confident.
It's going to be super exciting no matter what. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if there's any smack talk from Josh between Josh and Jakob. I think most of the smack comes from Jakob and Josh kind of deflects, but yeah. And then you've got Jake Whiteman in there. He's a bit of an unknown as well. So no, it'd be exciting. If the Olympic 1500 meter winner isn't in this race that I've just read out as well, I'll be damned.
Okay.
So
yeah, but you know, I would love to see Jordi Beamish win it, but it's not going to happen.
No. Hard to know with Jordi. I think, yeah, he's a good 1500 meter runner, but I think there's a reason why he races steeple.
Yeah.
Maybe he just doesn't have that 3:29 type speed that some of these other guys have, but happy to be proved wrong. And I hope he does prove me wrong.
Yeah. And on that note, that's a good note to finish on.
Yep, 100%. Thanks for joining me, Michael. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you in a couple of weeks. This was the Backstraight Podcast. Hooroo.
Hooroo.